The Guiding Light, a survey of some of the principles that should govern the conduct of a true Christian. Chapter 1. The Significance of Principles. In connection with every subject that enters into human life, there are certain guiding principles to light the way. If we can find, and in some measure classify, these principles, and if we are wise enough to use them, we are never in darkness, however strange to us the details of our path may be. It is impossible to say how many principles of life there are, or what is the order of their importance. Men would never agree in such a discussion. The word principle is sufficiently elastic in its meaning to admit of different opinions as to its application. One man would say, "Here is a principle," when another would protest that the truth referred to was not sufficiently important so to be described. It should be called a minor law or an elementary rule. We need not dispute about words and the exact meanings that should be assigned to them. We use the word principle here as meaning a first general truth under which other truths can be classified. There are many fields with principles peculiar to themselves, from the Christian religion down to a game of skill. There are major and minor principles in each field, and often it is possible to use well-established first principles as a platform on which to acquire knowledge of principles still higher. There is one principle, however, which applies to all these fields. That is, the rule of being guided by principles. If we are on ground that is strange to us, we should immediately ask, "What are the main principles of this subject?" And we should find the answer as soon as possible. If we are thoroughly familiar with the details, we must still remember the principles covering those details, or we shall go astray in spite of all our empirical knowledge. Men have observed this rule of being guided by principles most thoroughly in the unimportant fields of life. There is probably not a man on earth who has studied the principles of Christianity with such intensity as Signor Capablanca and Dr. Alekhine have studied the principles of chess. It has often been remarked that the apprehension of principles is the highest effort of the human intellect. A baby cannot have the slightest idea of principles until many months of experience have taught him. The development of the child's mind furnishes the best illustration of successive platforms of thought, each stage very helpful, although incomplete. The absolute raw material of thought is in sensation. The newborn babe possesses no knowledge, but, if properly equipped with senses, he will soon apply them to gain acquaintance with his little world. When he first sees a chair, he knows nothing of its uses or of its qualities. It is simply a sensation of sight, producing in his mind a mental image that can be recognized again. Every time the sensation is repeated, the impression of this image becomes deeper and easier to be remembered. If one day the chair has been moved, and another slightly different one put in its place, the baby will look with surprise at the newcomer. He cannot, at this stage, make a proper comparison. He cannot say even to himself, "The covering used to be red, but now it is blue." His mind has not yet grasped these concepts of color. He simply notices a difference in the image and is puzzled. If he presently sees the old chair in a different position in the room, he will look from one to the other with quickened interest. If, finally, one of the human beings whose service he accepts as a matter of course removes the interloper and restores the old chair to its place, the baby will probably show signs of pleasure that the puzzle has been solved. He has made considerable mental advance. Here are the beginnings of a recognition of plurality, and color, and position, and comparison. Later, when he attempts to reach the chair and to climb upon it, the brain is developing at such a rate that comparisons are being made and childish judgments formed every minute. A few mishaps in this adventurous undertaking may suffice to bring to light something in the nature of an elementary principle. The child does not need to fall off every article of furniture in the house before discovering that climbs are dangerous and falls painful. We have seen a child, only just able to walk, creeping unattended on some of those terrible stone steps that seem as if designed as death traps for children in some of the tiny houses of our towns. Yet he has been so cautious that he has not come to grief, though making many perilous journeys up and down. His obvious recognition of the danger is no proof that he has ever fallen down those particular steps. Still less is it evidence that he has ever heard of the law of gravitation. A few painful experiences, and perhaps some partially understood warnings from his elders, have made him recognize a general rule or principle which he is capable of applying to the various circumstances that arise. He is not very safe in the application, however. A little unusual excitement may direct his attention powerfully to some interest of the moment, and then all the danger is forgotten, probably with painful results. Many years later, as a man, he may repeat the error on another plane. He has built up many platforms of thought since the baby days and has learned of many principles. He knows that climbing is pleasant on the higher plane, and he knows that falls are very painful. He thinks that his caution can avoid them. Then something unusual rivets his attention. For the moment, he forgets the principles that usually rule his actions, and he falls, just as when, as a child, he went rolling down the steps. We have known an ordinarily astute man who became surety for another without even knowing the full amount of his liability. The usual results followed, and for a few weeks he was threatened with absolute ruin as the result of his mistaken kindness. One day during the worst period, he tried, as men in trouble often will, to get a little comfort from the Bible. He chanced to open the volume at the book of Proverbs, and he read the words of the wise man regarding this very matter of suretyship. "What a fool I am," he thought. "Here in the house all the while, in the book my mother taught me to read, is a warning that might have saved me from all this misery." In subsequent days of prosperity, he was generous to those who deserved help. He would give or lend as he was able, but he refused to be surety for anyone as a matter of principle, never forgotten again. "If you have the money available," he said, "give or lend, and you know what you are doing. If you have not the money, you have no right to put your hand to paper." We once heard of a commercial traveler who, as a matter of principle, refused to accept any offer of refreshment from a stranger while he was traveling. For a man who carried large sums of trust money, it was an excellent rule. One day on a long journey, he was in a compartment containing only one other traveler, a man who, with British aloofness, did not speak a word. The train stopped at a station, and another man entered, who suddenly recognized the aloof one and exchanged cordial greetings with him. Then, as the train went on its way, the two sustained an animated conversation with reminiscences of interesting experience and plenty of mirth. Finally, one, remarking that it was a cold night, opened his case and produced a little spirit stove and water and fresh ground coffee. The other laughed and expressed amazement at his friend's epicurean ingenuity. Presently, the pleasant aroma of coffee filled the compartment. The ingenious one produced cups and saucers, remarking that he had expected his wife and daughter to join him, but they had cried off at the last moment. Then, as they began to take the coffee, he suddenly caught the eye of the commercial traveler in the far corner. "Well, really, sir," he remarked, It's too bad that we should be regaling ourselves like this. Will you join us with a cup? The circumstances were so productive of confidence, and the man's manner was so engaging, that for once the commercial traveler forgot his principles. At the London Railway terminus, the officials succeeded in arousing him from a more comprehensive forgetfulness. Accompanied with much headache, his memory returned, but his money did not. If men can so readily forget these practical rules of life that touch their temporal interests so closely, what can we expect in connection with the principles of Christianity, which often seem out of accord with immediate interests and natural feelings? It has to be admitted that we frequently forget and need continual reminders of the truths that can save us. Many people remain comfortably and willfully ignorant of the first principles of the oracles of God, as the Apostle calls them. Repentance from dead works, faith, baptism, resurrection, and so forth. Many others, who have apprehended and obeyed these first principles, are continually flouting other and equally important principles that should regulate the life of a Christian. It is to some of these principles regarding conduct that we desire to call attention now. Life involves a constant process of attrition and renovation. We need to renew our spiritual strength, or it will all burn away. The foolish virgins in the parable forgot the simple truth that lamps only give light by the burning away of the oil. The lamp must be replenished, or the light will fail. In this world of our mortal experiences, there is a strange mixture of good and evil. In many ways it seems a blighted and faulty world. Yet, as we increase our experience and knowledge, we become conscious of a wonderful growing persuasion that in one respect the world is a perfect place. This strange extended garden of good and evil, with its devoted lovers and its snakes, its fruits sweet and bitter, its thorns and thistles, and its scorching barrier across the way to that which we desire most, is a perfect training ground for human character. We cannot suggest any alterations that would not in some way spoil it for this purpose. We find a good deal of joy in this blighted garden, although our experience is so different from that which we think we desire. We become reconciled to the reign of law, and if either in presumption or ignorance we break any of nature's laws, we realize the folly of complaining when we are punished. Most of us make some little attempt to learn the ruling principles of subjects in which we are interested, and we do not expect the laws to be changed or the flight of time to be stayed for our benefit if we are neglectful. Why should we expect God to be less logical in the greater world for which life in this blighted field makes selective preparation? Why not recognize that in the spiritual world, no less than in the natural, the lamps will go out unless replenished with oil? Why not make an effort to grasp and apply the most important principles of life now, remembering that there will come a time when, in the most literal and awful sense, it will be too late?